You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here with a surprise minisode. This is a case that's fascinated me for quite a while, and it's not really a long one deserving of a full episode, so I thought what better way to just get it out than through a surprise mini episode. So it's going to be a short one. That being said, super quick housekeeping. Our website is www.wesawthedevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media, as well as our Patreon. If you're digging the show, loving it, and want to financially support it, become part of the team, go to patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And super cool news on the Patreon front. First of all, you guys should be like basically now receiving your new updated stickers and postcards for March. The graphic designer is still currently working on a t-shirt logo, and we're going to have a couple of different t-shirts available to you. Well, everyone, but also executive producer patrons do get a free t-shirt with the new logo. And don't forget, if you're an executive producer level patron, you get to come on the show and actually do an episode with me about one of your favorite cases. And we have our first victim, Alana, who is amazing. She's a pathology assistant. I've learned so much from her. Love gory details and stuff like that that she shares. She's actually going to be coming on the show next week, and we're going to do a case together. She's actually from Texas. So if you guys can guess what case she's going to be covering, you get a cookie, an imaginary cookie. Super excited to have Alana on to talk about this case. It's a very large, well-known case from Texas that I actually haven't covered. So really excited. And again, for all of you other patrons who are executive producers, don't forget, you too can come do an episode with me on your favorite case. That being said, guys, let's just go ahead and get into it. Around 5 a.m. on September 29th, 1982, in Elk Grove Village, a suburb of Chicago, 12-year-old Mary Kellerman woke up with a fever, headache, sore throat, and runny nose. She walked down the hall and woke up her parents. Her father ended up giving her one capsule of extra-strength Tylenol before sending her back to bed. 2 hours later, at 7 a.m., her parents found her collapsed and unresponsive on the bathroom floor. Mrs. Kellerman immediately called 911 and an ambulance was dispatched to the family home, taking Mary to the Alexian Brothers Medical Center. She was officially announced dead at 10 a.m. Just a couple hours later, 7 miles away in Arlington Heights, 27-year-old Adam Janis took a Tylenol due to some back pain that he had been experiencing that was keeping him home from working at the post office that day. His wife made him lunch, he took 2 extra-strength Tylenol, and then went to lie down in bed. About 45 minutes later, his wife went in to check on him and found him unresponsive and in a coma. An ambulance came and took Adam to Northwest Community Hospital. While Adam was in the hospital, his parents, brother, and sister-in-law, as well as other family members, like 8 people in total, all showed up to the hospital to show support. Unfortunately, Adam passed away just a couple hours after they arrived. So the family returned back to Adam's house. Adam's brother Stanley and Stanley's wife Lisa came down with throbbing headaches. I mean, their brother and, you know, brother-in-law just passed away. So they each took 2 capsules of Tylenol Extra Strength from the medicine cabinet in Adam's bathroom. Adam's parents and other family members also experiencing headaches opted for aspirin. Stanley slipped into a coma and passed away an hour later. Lisa Janis died 2 days later. 3 members of the Janis family all tragically died within 48 hours of one another. Dr. Thomas Kim was the chief of critical care at Northwest Community Hospital that fateful day, and he was the first to see Adam Janis and attempted to resuscitate him when he first arrived. He met all of Adam's family when Adam was there originally. So can you imagine he's treating Adam Janis passes away, And then literally like 2 hours later, Adam's brother, who was previously just there visiting, comes in deceased. He was, I'm sure, flabbergasted when Stanley and Lisa went from grieving, you know, Adam to dead and unresponsive in his emergency ward just a couple hours later. Now, at that moment, he realized that something bigger was at the root of all of this. And hospitals didn't exactly, and to my understanding, don't exactly communicate inexplicable deaths to one another. So Dr. Kim had no idea that 12-year-old Mary Kellerman had just died a few hours before Adam entered the hospital. Dr. Kim wondered about carbon monoxide, food poisoning, drugs. He asked the remaining family members to bring food and drugs from Adam's home to the hospital, and they did. He got to work examining the items, trying to find something in common, and he couldn't figure it out. Based on the symptoms, he was thinking poison, but Tylenol overdoses don't have the same symptoms that Adam, Stanley, and Lisa presented. So he called a colleague at Rocky Mountain Poison Center, and that colleague told Dr. Kim what Dr. Kim already knew. The symptoms sounded a lot like cyanide poisoning. Dr. Kim took blood samples from the three victims and sent them off to be tested. And public health officials were sent to the Janus resident to investigate. Among them was nurse Helen Jensen. In an interview 30 years later, she said, quote, "We looked around and found prescription medication. Then I saw in the bathroom an open bottle of Tylenol. I counted up the pills and saw 6 capsules missing, and there were 3 people dead. I said right then and there, it's the Tylenol. They all poo-pooed me at the time. They didn't think a nurse, a woman, would make the connection." So for those of you who are listening, in short, nurse Helen Jensen immediately solved the mystery of people dropping dead, but because she was the owner of a vagina, the men would not listen to her. Nick Pishos, an investigator with the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office, examined the bottle of Tylenol. He said, quote, "I opened them up and looked inside. Nothing looked out of the ordinary. However, as I was pouring them out of the bottles, I could tell there was a strong smell of almonds." Sometimes cyanide is odorless. And even if it has a smell, roughly only 50% of people can smell it due to genetics. It's like the people who think cilantro smells like soap versus those who can't smell it at all or think it smells wonderful. Only 50% roughly of people, it's estimated, can actually smell that almond smell of cyanide. Luckily, Nick Pishos, the investigator, did. It was 1:15 a.m. the next morning when the blood testing laboratory called Dr. Kim to report that all 3 victims' blood did in fact contain cyanide. Huge amounts, in fact. Many times the lethal amount. Again, later that morning, the coroner's office called Dr. Kim to relay their findings from the Tylenol. Positive match to cyanide. The capsules contained massive amounts of cyanide, between 100 and 1,000 times the lethal amount. The next day, a couple of firemen who had heard of Mary Kellerman's passing, they contacted the police, who in turn left a message for Dr. Kim at Northwest Community Hospital. Dr. Kim had already had Adam Janus's bottle of extra strength Tylenol, so he asked police if they could collect the Kellerman's bottle. They agreed. So the police picked up the bottle and brought it to Dr. Kim at the hospital. He sent it off to be tested for cyanide at the coroner's office. While the bottle was being tested, 31-year-old Mary McFarland of Elmhurst died from cyanide poisoning. 5 deaths were officially now murders, and only 24 hours had passed since the first. Next came the death of Paula Prince, a 35-year-old flight attendant whose Tylenol purchase was actually captured on Walgreens security cameras. After her was 27-year-old Mary Rayner, who had just given birth to her 4th child 1 week before and had bought Tylenol for the recovery. The news went national and viral, and the police immediately got to work and knew that they were literally racing against time. They sent patrols around residential neighborhoods, yelling out through loudspeakers for people not to take Tylenol. And because society isn't fucked up enough, there was also a copycat attempt in California. Well, multiples actually around the country. But the one in California was the scariest because someone actually laced Tylenol with strychnine, and it actually poisoned a man, almost killing him. Thankfully, he lived. Nurse Jensen became very, very vocal and very, very loud about this, and she kept publicly pressuring police to remove Tylenol from the shelves of Illinois stores, but they actually ignored her and told her no. So she called Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson, the producer of Tylenol, at this point was already notified that all of this was happening, and they ordered that all Tylenol be removed from shelves nationwide. In fact, Johnson & Johnson took a leading role in the response to the murders. They issued a recall on more than 31 million bottles of Tylenol on U.S. shelves. They issued warnings and offered free replacements. They even offered a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the person or people responsible. And I read somewhere that at this point, at the beginning of this, that Tylenol, like Johnson & Johnson, specifically Tylenol itself, had like 45% of market share for like oral pain relievers. And after this debacle was over, they only held 7% of the market share. At 3 p.m. on October 1st, Johnson & Johnson declared the recall of Tylenol lot MC2880. The tainted capsules were found to have been manufactured at two different locations, Pennsylvania and Texas. Therefore, it became clear that they had been tampered with after they left the production facilities and then placed on the shelves. So almost like someone went into a store, bought them, tampered with them, injected, put the cyanide in there, and then placed them back on the shelves. At this point, the death toll is standing at 7, and Chicago Mayor Jane Byrne forced the city council to pass a law requiring drugs to be sold in tamper-resistant packaging. Over the following months, thousands of leads poured in to law enforcement. However, they were all dead ends. James Lewis, a mentally ill New York man, claimed responsibility for injecting cyanide into the Tylenol capsules, and he actually attempted to extort Johnson & Johnson for $1 million in exchange for him supposedly stopping it. Law enforcement arrested him and thoroughly investigated him as a possible suspect, but there just wasn't enough evidence to charge him. And investigators have spoken out since then and said he had nothing to do with it. He was just, you know, a little off and trying to make a buck. However, that being said, James Lewis was still sentenced to a very sweet 20 years in prison for extortion. So don't try, guys, to take advantage of a tragedy. What's scary is that to this day, no one has ever been charged or convicted with what's known as the Tylenol murders. The task forces have been shut down, and many of the people who were on the force or investigating it in the early 80s have retired. However, there have been a series of tamperings and whatnot through the years, all the way up until the late 90s. Granted, none of them have been as big or as impactful as the 7 from Chicago. This entire tragedy led to most medication bottles having tamper-resistant packaging. So the next time that you're having trouble opening the seal on your bottle of Advil or Tylenol and getting out that fucking cotton ball with your fat fingers, give a silent fuck you and middle finger to the unknown mysterious stranger who decided to murder 7 people and got away with it. That's all for this episode, guys. Until next crime.